This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of the more riveting performances I saw this year was given by Margot Martindale in the FX series Justified. She's up for an Emmy Sunday for that performance. It was great to see her develop a character through an entire season of a series. I'd been impressed with her before in Million Dollar Baby, playing Hilary Swank's mother, in Parish of Thames as a middle-aged woman whose life is changed by a trip to Paris, and in other roles, but it took me a while to realize that these performances were by the same person. She's co-starring in a new series called A Gifted Man that premieres Friday, September 23rd on CBS. Let's start with a scene from Justified. The series is about a deputy U.S. Marshal in Kentucky, played by Timothy Oliphant. In this year's ARC, he was investigating a family drug ring run by a very tough woman, Mags Bennett, and her sons. Mags was played by Margot Martindale. In this scene, she's disciplining her not very bright son for leaving a paper trail that could incriminate the family. As this clip begins, she picks up a hammer.
I'm sorry, Mama.
Cooper, I know you're sorry. That's why it's going to hurt so much to have to do this.
Hey, put your hand on his stump.
Take what's coming.
Mama.
I'm saving your gun hand now.
Mama, don't hurt me.
Cross me again and I will leave you.
Mama.
Mama,
you
gotta do this.
You shut your mouth.
Mama.
Because you're crippled to the point of worthlessness. It ain't you down on that table. As it is, I have to hurt Cooper. And I like Cooper.
Mama, I love you. Mama, I love you. Mama, no.
Margot Martindale, welcome to Fresh Air, and please don't hurt me.
Oh, that really makes me laugh.
It's such an amazing scene. And, I mean, you're playing it both ways. Like, you're the loving mother who has to do this as if you're about to spank your baby, but you're about to break his every finger in his hand with a hammer. But you're nice enough to spare his gun hand.
I know, isn't
that sweet? Because you love him that much.
So sweet.
Tell me what it was like to play that scene.
Well, you know, it was everything about this part just came so easily, and I had...
That scares me, I have to tell you.
I know, it's so crazy. But those boys were just fantastic. Brad Hinkey and Jeremy Davies and Joe Lyle Taylor, my sons. We had a blast. It was like doing a, you know, six-month movie. It was just, it was easy. That's all I can say. Very easy. That scene, the only thing I worried about was hurting his hand. It was a rubber hammer, but I kept saying, oh, please, Brad, if it hurts, let me know. And, of course, I think it hurt a little bit, but, you know, that's okay. He deserved it.
So you were telling me right before we went on the air that you actually used this scene as your Emmy submission scene.
I did. I mean, you know, I guess people have people to do that, but I have myself, really. And I watched lots of different – there's so much to choose from, but I – it's only 18 seconds, the most that they use. So that was the most concise scene that I thought actually was funny, too. I think it's funny, but, you know, that's my warped sense of humor. So that's the scene I chose.
So you are a really tough, cold, brutal woman in this, who also has this really folksy side. Like, the first time we see you, you're serving your bootleg liquor, which is affectionately known as your apple pie. So you have these, like, two sides, like the veneer, which is the folksy side, and the really brutal, you know, drug kingpin side beneath that. What was your audition like? They called you. I know that they called you for this role. What did they, whoever it was, from Justified, know about you?
You know what? I don't know what they knew about me, because I was in Los Angeles for the premiere of Secretariat, and my agent
Where you played the secretary?
I played the secretary in Secretariat, but I wasn't the horse. So,
thank you.
That's a good thing. But I was staying out to do an episode of Harry's Law, because Kathy Bates and I are old friends, and he said, would you like to go audition for this part? They wanted to see you for this Kentucky woman drug dealer. I said, oh, really? Do I have to audition for that? Can't they just look at my reel? And he said, no, they really want to hear you say the words. So then I got the script and read it. And I said, I'll go anywhere to do this. just tell me where to go. So I went and just with the casting director, read the scene, read most all of the scenes of the first episode, and two hours later they offered me the part.
They were so right. One of my favorite scenes in Justified is at like a town hall meeting. There's a big company, big coal mining company, that wants to buy out everybody's land so that they can, you know, that they can mine the mountains. And you get up and you give this inspirational speech about the spirit of the mountain people and how you're not going to give in to big coal. And it sounds like a cross between like the documentary Harlan County, USA, which is about coal mining, you know, like destroying Kentucky, and Norma Rae. But the truth, which we find out a little later, is that the reason why you don't want people to sell their land is because you want to force the coal company to accept the deal you're about to offer. You want to hold them hostage to your deal, which would make you incredibly wealthy and basically give you a percentage of the company that owns the coal company. So all this Appalachian speechifying is just a way to cut out all the people and get the deal that benefits you. So I want to play that speech that you give at this town hall meeting. And I want people to know as they listen to this that what we're hearing is like the surface, but there's something going on beneath the surface. So before we hear it, do you want to talk about playing both of those parts at the same time, playing the surface speech of like this is for the people, and then beneath that knowing it's really all about what you want for yourself?
It was kind of an interesting task because it was like being a preacher. I was acting the concerned and loving neighbor, but you had to believe that I was telling the truth. So it was kind of a challenge. It was also, it was very stage-like because that was two pages of a speech. It was a monologue on television. You don't really see that very often, that writers give time for things to really grow, and it's not just chopped up in one-liners and little speeches. It was a monologue, so it was challenging. I kept calling and saying, please don't send me any new pages, because I've been working on this for a week. Don't send me new pages on this speech.
Well, let's hear the speech that you give at the town hall meeting. We'll hear an excerpt of it, and in the speech we'll also hear the coal mining company representative Carol Johnson.
You know what happens when 500 million gallons of slurry breaks loose? The gates of hell open.
Those poundments are built strong to keep the slurry back.
The gates of hell open, and all that waste rolls down through the hollers and poisons the water and the land and everything it touches. Mining company has a word for those leavings, doesn't it? The spoil. The spoil. And that is what our lives will be if Black Pike has their way with our mountain.
With all due respect, Mrs. Bennett, Black Pike will replace the mountaintops and leave money, a lot of money, in the pockets of the working people of Bennett and Harlan County.
That a fact?
Yes, ma'am, that is a fact.
Well, that's something to consider, because it ain't an easy life here. No, ma'am. To an outsider, it's probably hard to understand why we're all not just lining up and saying, where do we sign? But we got our own kind of food, our own music, our own liquor. We got our own way of courting and raising children and our own way of living and dying. And to protect all that, we have got to say no thank you to Miss Carol Johnson here in Black Pike Mine.
That's Margo Martindale in a scene from the FX series Justified. And this is from season 2, which will eventually be out on DVD soon, I hope. So that is such a great thing. I love when you go to, we have our own food, we have our own way of living.
I tell you, they're just the greatest writers ever. They really are incredible.
Where did you go? Who did you watch? Did you watch movies? Did you visit Harlan County? What did you do to get into this?
I just came right out of me. I didn't do anything. I'm from Texas. I'm from East Texas. I'm from big land-owning people, big ranchers, big hunters, big athletes. They all talk like that. They're all smart and deceptive and powerful. And also, I lived 4 years in Kentucky at Actors Theater of Louisville. So it's all part of my makeup. You know, it's something I really understand. I'd like to say that I worked really hard and studied people and everything, but I didn't. It just came out of my imagination and the 60 years I've lived, truly.
I think one of your great tools is your voice. You have a really deep voice that you can make even deeper in roles like Justified. You can bring your voice from really like deep within. And I have to say that this is at a time when a lot of women speak in much higher voices, and when often our voices get more trapped in our throats for women. Mm. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about your voice and using how deep and full it can be in a role like your role on Justified,
where
you have to express power. You have to convey you've got the power.
Sometimes I worry that my voice is too buzzy, too round. That when I'm on stage, I really have to lift my voice. I have to put it in another spot so that you can hear me, because sometimes when you're down in this thing, you can't hear the enunciation as well. I remember when I was in high school, the biology teacher said to my favorite teacher, Mr. Billy Gwynn, said to the students, "Now listen to Margot Martindale's voice. Now she's probably got more male genes in her voice." I thought, "What in the hell is that?" Thank you, Mr. Gwynn. Oh boy. My voice is lower than both of my brothers, but one of them is not with me anymore. But my voice is lower than their voices. Texas men usually have a little bit higher voices like that. But mine's lower than, my mother had a very low voice too. So I don't know. Sometimes I feel that it is a plus, and sometimes I think that it gets in my way, my voice.
Why does it get in your way sometimes?
And maybe Justified has changed that for me in my head. Sometimes I think I have to pretty it up, girlify it, make it more, make it a little sweeter, a little softer, a little more, you know, have a little more. Because everybody I talked to on the phone has said, "Yeah, yes, sir. No, sir." I said, "This is a woman." I've said, "This is a woman," I must say, maybe 2,500 times in my life. This is a woman, and I get really pissy about it.
This is why I'm so grateful to the people on Justified for allowing you to, like, unleash your gifts.
they just let me run wild. Isn't that wonderful? It was really, really liberating, I can tell you that. It also, I think because I let it go, I let everything except that I loved to act and I loved to be honest and true to the character. That's all that I cared about. And I didn't care what I look like. I didn't care obviously I didn't care what I look like. I care what I look like. I care that I'm fat. I care, but Mags Bennett did not care. And I love that about Mags Bennett. So maybe,
well, her size is part of her power.
So maybe she's taught me something. I hope so.
You just described yourself as fat.
Yes.
I'd use the word plump or something, but
you're so sweet.
Thank you. But I read that when you were in high school, you were a cheerleader, and
I
you
was
were
a
like
cheerleader.
The football homecoming queen or something along those
I
lines.
I was the football sweetheart in the ninth grade. I was Miss Jacksonville High School in high school, but I was never the homecoming queen. Let's get that straight, because people really get mad when they read that.
But I imagine you had, you know, quite an attractive figure then to be a cheerleader.
I had a really lovely figure. I did. Surprise!
Did it upset you when you started putting on weight?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, uh-huh. It's always, I wore a body brace all during my teenage years, from when I was 12 until I was 15.
For like scoliosis or something?
For severe scoliosis. They think I had polio when I was 3 and that it, when my spine grew, that it grew crooked. So I wore a body brace and I wore prism glasses to see. I was extremely small. And then when I got out of that brace, I put on, I'd say, 20 pounds almost immediately because I felt very vulnerable. So I...
Oh, because you didn't have this, like, a brace protecting you.
I didn't have a body. I didn't have armor around me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I'm talking, then I weighed 140 pounds instead of 120 pounds. And then after my father died, I gained 70 pounds. Then I lost that 70 pounds. And I stayed all right until I had a child. And then I just said, to hell with it. And went with it. Now I'd love to lose some weight. Mm-hmm. So there.
If you're just joining us, my guest is actress Margot Martindale. She was the season guest star this year in the FX series Justified. She played a really powerful, really tough Appalachian woman who basically runs a marijuana drug ring. Now she's in a new series called A Gifted Man, a new TV series. The first time I noticed you was in the Clint Eastwood movie Million Dollar Baby, which starred Hilary Swank as a young boxer who was really kind of going against the odds because she's a woman, and she's being trained by an over-the-hill boxer trainer played by Clint Eastwood. And when she starts to win matches, she buys her mother, you, and her sister's child a house. Now, they're all on welfare. They don't really care about her. They're what some people might call white trash.
Yeah, some people.
When she takes you and your daughter to your new home that she bought you to surprise you all, the big surprise is your reaction. So here's the scene with Hilary Swank and you as her mother. You speak first.
How much money this costs?
You never mind that.
Well, you shouldn't have done this.
You need a decent place.
You shouldn't have done it. You should have asked me first. Darling, government's going to find out about this house. They're going to stop my welfare.
Oh, no, they ain't.
Yeah, they are. You're fine. You're working, but I can't live without my welfare.
Mama, I send you money.
What about my medicine? Medicaid going to cut me off. How am I supposed to get my medicine?
I'll send you more money.
I hope you don't expect JD to move in here with us. He's getting out, you know.
Why don't you just give me the money? You have to buy me a house.
I didn't have to, Mama. But it's yours. You want the money? Sell it.
What gratitude you display. In that scene, that was really just such a stunning role. I saw that and I was wondering, who is that actress? Because I don't think I'd really seen you in much before that, or I hadn't really noticed. It's a great role where you are a very unappealing character. Do you have fun with roles like that where you have to really play unappealing, ungrateful?
I think they're the most fun. The only thing you lose mostly in those parts is that sense of humor. It's not being funny. I think some of those parts are funny, but only funny in how brutal they are. You have to let the bounce and music of repartee go away. You can't be sophisticated in that way when you play those parts. But they've given me the most joy.
So how did you prepare for this part, for instance?
You know, I... same kind of thing. I mean, it was sort of a lead-in to Justified, I think. I was in Los Angeles again. They asked me to come in and audition for that part. And I said, I want to wait till I get back to New York because I want this part. And I feel more comfortable auditioning in New York. It's a weird thing. You feel more comfortable at home. And I did the whole part. I learned the whole part. I did the whole part. And I think that's the way you get it for Clint Eastwood. If you're not a star, you really have to show him the whole thing done.
Did he give you any advice or, you know, any notes at the audition?
He wasn't there. He's never there.
Oh, he's never... Oh.
When I got that, when we did it, he said, "We love what you did. Just do it that way." So he just kind of let me do whatever I wanted to do. It was nice. He's wonderful.
He was one of the stars of the film, playing the manager of the boxer. And there's a scene at the end after the young woman boxer, played by Hilary Swank, has broken her neck. She's lying helplessly in her bed. She's paralyzed from the neck down. And you and your daughter, like the whole family, comes in, basically putting a document under her nose and telling her to sign it with her mouth because it's the only part of her body that moves, willing everything she owns to you for when she dies. And Clint Eastwood is in the doorway staring really hostily at you. And I'm wondering what the experience was like of having your director, because he directed the film as well, in the doorway staring hostily at you as you were trying to do your scene.
Oh, honestly, that scene, the first part of the movie, the first two scenes that I did, then I went home and my brother died.
Oh, my God.
And, and when I came back, he was so kind to me that what I really was doing during all of that last scene was trying very hard not to be emotional about it. So it was, everybody was extremely supportive, and it was all about me not giving in to my own life experiences during that time. He couldn't be more lovely and wonderful as a director and a person.
Would you mind if I asked how your brother died?
He died of outpatient surgery.
Oh, no. Well, like a staph infection or something?
No. He blew a blood clot in the morning. He went home after having some kind of hernia operation. And
oh, no.
And, died. He called me before he got... Actually, he had a hernia operation and one of his testicles removed. I'm sorry, Tim. But... He called me when he got home. He said, hi, sister. I'm going to go to sleep. Then he said, I'm tired. I said, oh, Tim, you're ridiculous. And then he said, I'll call you tomorrow. And he was dead. So it was really shocking and hard. And he was 58 years old.
So he was an older brother.
He was 5 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And I have another brother 13 years older than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
No, thank you.
So I'm thinking, a lot of actors are given the advice to kind of play, like find the emotion within you, play yourself in a way, be your version of that character. And from how you're describing it, you had to make sure you were not in touch with your emotions because your emotions are so raw. At that moment, did you have to draw on a completely different way of acting because what you were experiencing was so profound and so, so bad? So you were in such grief.
I never thought about that, but yes, I guess I did. Though I think that approaching that scene, I would have shut down that part of me anyway because I'm very empathic and I would have been affected emotionally by that scene as me. So I had to actually, like in Justified, shut down that part of me that feels for people. So that part of my brain was not there.
There's one other movie I want to ask you about, and I don't know how many people saw this. There's an independent film called Paris, Je T'aime, and it was about 12 very short films put together in this one anthology, all having to do with Paris. And you're the star of the final film, and it's basically your film. You're the only character we follow in this film. It's largely done in a voiceover, and the premise is that inspired by your adult education French class, you've decided to take a week in Paris on vacation. Now you're a postal worker. You're single. You're kind of lonely. You don't have much of a life outside your job, but you've gone to Paris. You're a very unsophisticated traveler. There's a lot about Paris you really don't get, but you just start coming alive during the course of this short film, and it ends with this just lovely moment where you're sitting on a park bench in Paris, just like watching the people in the park, watching, seeing the grass and the sunshine. And in the voiceover, you say something to the effect that you feel the joy and sadness of being alive. And you've woken up. You are alive in a way that you hadn't been before, even though you're still alone. But something's been turned on within you. And it's a beautiful moment. We see it in your face, and it's such a nice performance. And then your voiceover, the premise is that you're basically reading your journal to the French class, and you're not very good at French, so you're reading it in this just really heavily American-accented French that probably no French person would ever be able to understand. I love this character, and it's different from the other characters we've been talking about because she's not a heavy. She could have been a real, like, stereotype lonely middle-aged woman, but you don't play her that way.
That's so sweet. I loved doing that. That and Justified and Million Dollar Baby. You've picked the three my favorite things I ever did. Alexander Payne called me up.
He wrote and directed your segment. Yeah.
He wrote and directed my segment, and he said, "Margo, this is Alexander Payne. Do you remember me?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I've written something. I've written it for you. I've never written for anyone before, and there's no money in it, and would you like to come to Paris and do it?" I said, "Let me think about that, yes." And then we hung up. He explained a little bit about what it was. We hung up and called me back, and he said, "By the way, do you speak French?" I said, "Not a word." And he said, "Oh, that's even better." So when we got there, and they brought my husband and me, and we had a fabulous time in Paris. And I'd never been to Paris, so that was really perfect for that character. We shot that last scene first.
Why?
So after we did that last scene, Alexander said, "Well, everything else is gravy." He also had me watch, before I got there, Fellini film that he wanted to, the leading character, he kind of wanted me to have a feeling of this woman, and that's what you see in there. And I can never remember the name of this movie, but it's Cabrini.
Knights of Cabiria.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway, I tried to have her feeling of innocence. There's an innocence about her that I tried to. It's very, very like a child seeing something for the first time.
What's it like to play like the epiphany before you've played everything leading up to it?
Well, you know what? It was in a park in Paris in the 14th arrondissement, and I was sitting on a park bench. And I could start. This was like being me. This thing. I was sitting on a park bench, and I went from looking at some old people on a bench and thinking of my mother and all the people that were gone, to panning over to seeing a playground full of children and thinking of my daughter growing up, and it just was there, just immediately.
Oh. Well, I could see how it would be there because the emotion is still so there.
It's just, you know, it's all about life. It was so easy. I'm sorry. It was
so easy to do.
Yeah. And so everything else was just, and Alexander directed me as if he were directing a silent movie, which was fantastic. It was a perfect combination for me.
Can I just say what you've just demonstrated is just the opposite of what you had to do, you know, going back to when after your brother died and you were playing this like callous mother in Million Dollar Baby, when you said you had to shut down your own feeling to play that scene because you were just feeling such grief and you had to be so cold. And in this, you totally drew on, in Parish of Tem, you totally drew on yourself, on your own experiences, your own memories, your loss, the pleasure of watching your daughter grow up. And that emotion is still obviously so with you. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's with us all, isn't it? All what we've lived through. That's the most wonderful part about getting older.
And
having experience in life. I mean, I played Big Mama in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof when I was 20 years old at the University of Michigan. And then I played Big Mama on Broadway in 2004. Where the speech at the end of that play, time goes by so quickly, nothing can outrun it, death commences too early, even before you're half acquainted with life, you meet with the other. Boy, did that have different weight from when I was 20 years old to when I was 50-some-odd years old. It's all about just what you've experienced. You can't teach that to a younger actor. You have to have lived it, I think.
My guest is Margot Martindale, and she's co-starring in a new TV series that premieres soon. It's called A Gifted Man. And in this one, you're the assistant to a surgeon who's gifted in two senses. He's brilliant at diagnosis and surgery, and he's discovered a new gift, a supernatural one. He can actually see and communicate with his ex-wife, who returns to him after she's killed in a car accident. And she wants a favor. She wants him to care for the patients at the free clinic that she ran while she was alive. He has a very wealthy practice, and she ran a free clinic for poor people, so he has to decide what to do at the end of the first episode, and he's totally baffled by this whole supernatural experience. But anyways, you're his assistant, and I'm going to play a scene from early on with you and the surgeon, who's played by Patrick Wilson. Do you want to say anything before hearing the scene?
Well, number one, I think he is delicious, Patrick Wilson, and we have incredible chemistry, and I love medical shows, and I love ghosts. So that is the part, and I think other people do too. And I'm excited about it.
Good, good. Well, let's hear the scene from episode one.
You have an 8 a.m. staff meeting, then the two back-to-back gliomas. Mm. Madeline needs 15 minutes.
Put her in at lunch.
Can't. You'll be doing a consult with Lacey Sandreski. Lacey Sandreski.
Lacey Sandreski.
She's 19 years old, ranked number one. In the last 12 months, she's won Wimbledon, the U.S. Open, and the Australian Open. And if she wins the French, which starts next week, she'll be the youngest woman ever to win a Grand Slam.
What's her consult about?
Her father wouldn't say, just that they need to see you ASAP. One more thing. It's my birthday.
Again?
Once a year, like everyone else. Lynn's taking me to Jean-Luc. I'm leaving at 6.
Jean-Luc is overrated. Madeline.
I need 15 minutes.
I told him. Happy birthday, Rita. Why, thank you, Michael.
Margot Martindale in a scene from her new TV series, A Gifted Man. So this is a relatively, like, normal person that you're playing. Judging from the first episode, you know, we've heard so many, like, you know, like brutal and weird and or very, like, interior kind of roles that you've played. And here you're like a really competent working professional.
Isn't that a surprise? I've tried to make her a drunk who had gone to rehab, but they wouldn't let me.
Why'd you want to do that? Add a little bit of color?
Just to give me something more, yes. I like complicated people.
Right. Well, earlier we talked about your voice, and it turns out that you have a great singing voice.
Aww.
There's a moment in Justified where you're on the porch and somebody says, oh, sing, and you go, oh, no. Of course, hoping that they'll keep asking, which they do. So you break out into song, and you sound great. So have you done musicals or anything like that?
I've done a lot of musicals. I love music. I love music. I would love to do a musical again. It's been a while.
Your husband's a musician, right?
Mm-hmm, he is. He's a lyric tenor. And
oh, he sings?
Uh-huh. He's fantastic.
Oh.
And so when I married him, I didn't think I could sing anymore because he can sing. I'm just incredibly musical. That's what he always says. You're extremely musical. So, but yeah, it's fun. I can sing. No, I'm not a great singer, but I can sing.
Well, Marco Martindale, it has been so great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Terry. I so appreciate it.
And I hope you get that Emmy.
Oh, that'd be fun.
You really
would be fun. The dress has been the hard part.
Well, like what you're going to wear?
I think I love it. I think I love it. She's a fantastic designer, Jane Sattel, and it's red because I said no black, no jackets. I'm not going to hide.
So it's not like a pants thing. It's like a dress thing.
Yeah, a pants thing. I should have worn pants. I don't know. I feel most comfortable in pants, but it is a long dress.
Well, I'm glad you're not wearing what you wore on Justified because it wouldn't be appropriate for the occasion.
Maybe that's what I should have worn. Some big flannel shirt with a big ass belt around it.
So thank you so much. Good luck with your new series,
thank you.
A Gifted
thank
Man.
You.
And here you are singing on the porch in Justified.
High on the mountain road, wind blowing free, thinking about the days that used to be. High on a mountain, standing all alone, wondering where the years of my life had flown.
Margot Martindale is up for an Emmy Sunday in the category Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for her performance in the FX series Justified. She's in the new TV series, A Gifted Man, which premieres Friday, September 23rd on CBS. We'll see what the new TV season has in store for us in a minute when our TV critic David Bianculli presents his fall preview. This is Fresh Air. The new fall TV season is around the corner, and some new shows are already jumping the gun and offering early premieres this week. TV critic David Bianculli gives a broad overview of what to expect and what not to miss. His overall assessment isn't that optimistic.
For the second year in a row, the new shows served up by the broadcast TV networks are dull and disappointing. Not a great new program in the bunch. There are a pair of terrific new series on the horizon, on cable. But the entire fall TV season concept has been defined and dominated by broadcast television for half a century now. And though that changes a little each year, it's still the biggest game in town with the most viewers and the most attention. So here we go again. On broadcast TV this season, the biggest excitement, for the most part, is generated by changes to some returning shows, all of them on CBS. The network is so certain of a growing audience for The Good Wife, especially against pro football, that it's moving that drama series from Tuesdays to Sundays. There are high-profile changes in leading men, too. Ashton Kutcher, hoping to keep 2.5 Men going after Charlie Sheen in that sitcom parted ways, is guaranteed must-see TV, at least for week one. CBS hasn't shown that to critics yet, but it did give us a taste of Ted Danson as the newest star of the original CSI crime scene investigation. And judging from only one brief but tender and funny scene, Danson looks like the best replacement hire on a TV drama since Jimmy Smits took over for David Caruso on NYPD Blue. All three of those changes will take effect the week of September 19th when the 2011 TV season begins officially. Unofficially, though, it starts this week, with NBC premiering two new comedies and the CW network unveiling three new shows. Of the five, easily the best is CW's Ringer, a drama premiering Tuesday night. It marks the return to TV of Sarah Michelle Gellar of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame. She plays a dual role, portraying both Bridget, an ex-stripper on the run, and Siobhan, her rich and pampered sister with her own dangerous secrets. In the pilot, these identical twins meet after 6 years apart, as Siobhan welcomes Bridget for a secret reunion at her opulent beach house.
This is our weekend place. Make yourself at home. Looks just like my house, except not at all. Your life seems perfect. Close to it, but no one's life is perfect. So, it's just the two of us this weekend. Where's Andrew? He's in London, working, then visiting Juliet at boarding school. So, how long have you guys been married? Almost 5 years. Bridget, Andrew doesn't exactly know about you. About my visiting? About your existing. He doesn't know I have a sister.
If that clip leaves you intrigued but not overwhelmed, join the club. That's my reaction to a handful of new series this year. They aren't bad, but I sure wish they were better. That said, here are the broadcast TV shows to remember and sample as the fall season rolls out this month and next. New Girl is a Fox comedy starring Zooey Deschanel as a young girl who moves in with three guys, platonically at least at first, after a painful romantic breakup. The pilot's not that endearing, but the actress certainly is. Once Upon a Time is a high-concept ABC fantasy about fairy tale characters who are put under a spell and banished to our world with their memories removed. What makes this interesting is that it comes from the network owned by Disney, so its Snow White and other characters get very close to the iconic animated versions with no fear of a lawsuit. We haven't seen X Factor yet, but since that Fox competition show marks the return of both Simon Cowell and Paula Abdul, I wouldn't bet against it. However, despite the name of Steven Spielberg behind another Fox series, Terra Nova, I might bet against that one, even though I'll keep an eye on it for a while. Its premise is classic sci-fi. People in the future escape from a toxic Earth by time-traveling back to prehistoric days and setting up camp. The CGI dinosaurs are cool and seem real. The human characters, not so much. Period dramas are big this year because of Mad Men. And while NBC's Playboy Club is horrible, ABC's Pan Am, starring Christina Ricci, is slicker, smarter, and a lot more watchable. I'd give that a try. And the same goes for NBC's remake of Prime Suspect, starring Maria Bello in a cop show inspired by the fabulous British program starring Helen Mirren. The new show itself isn't bad, but it's got almost nothing to do with the original Prime Suspect. So much so that using the title almost amounts to false advertising. In any event, it's an infinitely better remake than ABC's remake of Charlie's Angels, one of the worst new shows of the season. And that's in a season with Hader on CW and I Hate My Teenage Daughter on Fox. I hate them all. They're the worst. But what about the best? In October, two new shows are coming that you absolutely must watch. But they're coming on cable. One is Showtime's Homeland, which stars Damian Lewis from Band of Brothers and Life. He plays an American POW rescued after years of captivity. He returns as a hero, but a CIA agent played by Claire Danes suspects him of having been turned and actually being a double agent for Al-Qaeda. Only one of them is the real hero of this series, and for a while at least, we don't know which. This unusual drama comes from some of the producers of 24, and the pilot is wonderful. Also unusual and wonderful is the new FX series American Horror Story, which may be the scariest TV show I've ever seen. It's about a couple who tries to save their marriage by moving across the country, but unfortunately, they move into a house with a history of being haunted. It's from the team behind Glee and Nip Tuck, and it's got an unbelievably talented cast. Connie Britton from Friday Night Lights as the wife, Dylan McDermott from The Practice as the husband, Frances Conroy from 6 Feet Under as the housekeeper, and, as the spooky neighbor, Jessica Lange. 1 month from now, my guess is that you'll be talking about both those shows. And another guess, a month from now, you won't be talking about most of the other TV shows about to premiere. but be patient. Good stuff is on the way.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of TVWorthWatching.com and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. I sometimes end the show with news about people we work with. It's usually great news, like the birth of a baby or someone leaving for an exciting new job. Today, the news is not good. Our former colleague, Nessa Foreman, died over the weekend of pancreatic cancer. She was WHYY's Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs from 1983 to 2007. I'm grateful that I got to work with her and know her. Nessa was enormously helpful when Fresh Air made the transition from a local to a national program, and she bailed me out of a couple of tough spots over the years. But more important, she was a person who cared about the station, its programs, the audience it served, and the people she worked with. I'm one of the very, very many people who will miss her. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.